So we're going to continue our movement through the Paul's letter to the Galatian church, the Galatians who received and welcomed the message of the gospel so fully, and appeared to be considering going back into the confines of a religious practice. They were considering returning back to slavery. Religion can be one of the most greatest dangers to us as human beings. When it allows a false sense of being right with God, so we're going to be considering a link of religion has, as we look at Abraham, as he sought to have a son, and the son not being Isaac, I'm talking about the son Ishmael. So we're going to read from Galatians chapter 4, verse 8 to 10. This reads, "Formerly, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those who by nature are not gods. But now that you know God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you are turning back to those weak and miserable principles? Do you wish to be enslaved by them all over again? You're observing special days and months and seasons and years." What we see here is a remarkable change that happens in a person's life when they come to faith, when they're known by God. Now, when he talks about being known by God, it's obviously that it's not that God has just forgotten people's names, has it? God doesn't forget people's names. Known by God shows an intimacy, a relationship established by God. Last week we saw that the blessing to the world that was promised to Abraham, that blessing was the coming of the Holy Spirit. We are given the Spirit of God, and it's the Spirit of God that within us cries, "Abba, Father." That's what we looked at last week. This is what it means to be known by God. When thinking about this, I couldn't help but think of the Queen reviewing the troops. Have you seen her reviewing troops? So walking down, looking up and down. She reviewed, it seems to be a queeny thing to do, doesn't it, to review the troops. Well, as she walks down the line, she may even know all the soldiers' names. She might be introduced to every soldier. But when she comes to Captain William Wales, or Captain Henry Wales, her grandsons, even if she knows other person's names, she knows these ones. These are her grandchildren. And they know her. Now, I think it's appropriate that we see God in the same light as that. God obviously knows everyone in your suburb. He knows everyone in your street. But when he looks at you, he knows you because you're his child. You're the fulfillment of the promise. And he's proud of that, isn't he? You think God is proud that he's fulfilled his promise? I think so. And you are that. You're a part of the blessing that was promised to Abraham. This relationship with God is given through faith in Jesus, a free gift. If this is given to us, why would we go back to what we were? He's talking to Pharisees. Some of these people were Pharisees who were strict law keepers. Why would you go back to that when that didn't save you? He could have been talking to very moralistic Gentiles, non-Jews. Why would you want to go back to that when you weren't saved then? You may have been talking to the most awful sinner. Why would you want to go back to that? Why would you want to leave? Why would you want to exclude yourself from the grace of God given to us and go back to what you were? It's interesting that in the Old Testament, the Israelites, remember they came out of Egypt. God saved them, did miraculous things. They didn't have to do a thing. And they walked out of Egypt with no one stopping them. And God did that. But when they get into the desert, they start to grumble, don't they? They actually start thinking, why did we leave? I'm sure there were some people actually thinking, hoping, could we actually go back to Egypt? It seems to be a human nature that we don't like freedom. That's a bit of an oxymoron, that we don't like freedom. Have you noticed our society that espouses freedom? You know, we're getting more and more laws every day, don't we? More and more laws. Books, shelves full of laws, because we have freedom. We need to be careful when we come to a Christian understanding of living. We believe, of course, that we are justified through faith. God looks at us as just as if I have not sinned. We're justified through faith. This justification comes in belief by believing in God. But our ongoing transformation that goes over our whole life as we progress to be more and more like Jesus, the Bible calls that sanctification. There is a temptation for some Christians to think that we are justified by grace and we are sanctified by law. We are sanctified by obeying rules. But that's not the case at all. Do you remember the promise to Abraham that from the childless couple, they had no children? Firstly, they'd have a large family, they'd have a large nation. There'd be one person who'd be a blessing to the whole world because of through their family. God did that completely himself. It was not Abraham that did that. He didn't achieve that. God saves sinners, he justifies them, and God sanctifies them. He gives us his spirit so that we become more like Jesus. That is why we have the spirit within us. Sure, we do cooperate with what God is doing, but God does it through grace, not law or works, our justification and our sanctification. Paul here mentions that the keeping of special days is talking about complying to a religious structure for the purpose of being right with God. Now, it's a good reminder for us, isn't it? It's a reminder that we are not required to meet here on a Sunday. We could meet here on a Saturday. We can meet here on a Monday. It's our convention, it's our culture to meet here on a Sunday. It's easy because most of us have a day off in our society. It suits us better than any other day. But there's nothing more holy about meeting here on a Sunday as if meeting here is something that God gives us. We obey his law. There's nothing lawful about that. When the first Christians started to meet on Sunday, it wasn't their day off. They actually got up very early in the morning before they went to work. How about that for a time to meet for church? Monday morning, 5:30. That's when they met, on a Sunday morning. And of course, they couldn't help but remember there was on that Sunday morning that Jesus rose again. And how wonderful it was to meet on that Sunday morning before work, before they'd go out for their day. And we know, of course, through history that that developed onto a Sunday and then we had weekends, which is wonderful, it allows us to meet each day. But there is nothing sacred about this day than any other day. There are some churches that see that they're keeping a certain day, particularly on a Saturday, means that they are right with God. They are more right with God than other people. Paul is talking against any sense of compulsion to keep special days for the sake of being right with God. We do keep special days, don't we? Well, we meet on Sunday. But we also have Christmas and Easter. Christmas is coming up. A great opportunity to celebrate and to remember. It's a great opportunity to invite family and friends to come along who don't normally come. However, any ideas that keeping of these days as special, or any idea that if you don't come on a Christmas or Easter, you're not really a Christian, is foolish and wrong. You can be a person who loves and has a close relationship with God and not come to church on a Christmas day. It was obviously a real problem that Paul had to address. Religious practice can be bad for us if we have in mind somehow that what we are doing means that we are right with God. Romans 14:5 is another place where Paul addresses this. One person considers one day more sacred than the other. Another considers each day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Or Colossians 2:16. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, Well, with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day, you should not be under any compulsion. There's no law that you can obey that makes you more right with God. But let me read on chapter 4, verse 11. I fear for you that somehow I've wasted my efforts on you. I plead with you, brothers, become like me, for I became like you. You've done me no wrong. As you know, it was because of an illness that I first preached the gospel to you. Even though my illness was a trial to you, you did not treat me with contempt or scorn. Instead, you welcomed me as if I was an angel of God, as if I was Christ Jesus himself. What has happened to all your joy? I can testify that if you could have done so, you would have torn out your eyes and given them to me. Have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? Those people are zealous to win you over, but not for good. What they want is to alienate you from us, so that you may be zealous for them. It is fine to be zealous, provided the purpose is good, and to be so always, and not just when I'm with you. My dear children, for whom I am again in the pains of childbirth until Christ is formed in you, how I wish I could be with you now and change my tone, because I am perplexed about you. It appears that Paul met them when he was very ill. And some people suggest that when he was in Pamphylia on that missionary journey, Pamphylia is a place where there's a lot of marshes, a lot of mosquitoes, he may have caught malaria. That's what a lot of people suggest. That the eye problem may have come from the malaria. It's called the disease that people with malaria can get, ophthalmia, which is a problem with the eyes. Malaria, of course, is very common amongst missionaries, isn't it? The old time missionaries used to think that if you haven't got malaria, you're not really properly a missionary. Well, it wasn't quite true. But here we see something important. Principles for Christian service. Whether you share with your workmates or your family and friends, the people in the street, or when you go on missionary service, the aim is not just to get converts. The aim is not just to get notches, you know, that you on your scoreboard, on your score sheet. It's not about how effective you can get them to do what you want. We see here a true relationship amongst Peter, Paul, and the people there. A true affection between Paul and the believers, as opposed to the false teachers who were coming just simply to use them. And again, Paul talks about them how in a fatherly way, passionate and with love. A true father does not profit from their children. He takes great joy in his children and wants the best for them. But it also works the other way, doesn't it? The parents get sick and injured. It's right for children to look after them. And that's what we see here with Paul. I do appreciate this church here so very much. When I talk to other pastors and hear some of the stories, I thank God that you are my church family. One pastor I know was suffering from cancer and appeared to be something that would be a long-term sickness, as some of you have experienced. After undergoing treatment, he decided he should resign from his role and he's moved from his church because he could no longer fulfill that role. The church should have said no, shouldn't they? The church should say, you stay here and be a part with us and we will care for you. Just because you can't preach every week, just because you can't do what you hope to do, doesn't mean you shouldn't be a part with us. Perhaps from this sort of passage we see that the care that is to be amongst us, the community, the familyness of what it is to be a child of God. There is a very clear message here about the relationship between church leaders and church community. Paul pleads to them earnestly with passion. He does that out of love for them. He goes further to have an illustration that would be very relevant to them. Look at verse 21. He says, tell me, you who want to be under the law, are you not aware of what the law says? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman, the other by a free woman. His son by the slave woman was born in the ordinary way, but his son by the free woman was born as a result of a promise. These things may be taken figuratively, for the women represent two covenants. One covenant is from Mount Sinai and bears children who are to be slaves, that is Hagar. You remember Hagar was the slave of Abraham? And now Hagar stands for Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present city of Jerusalem because she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem that is above is free. She is our mother. For it is written, be glad, O barren woman who bears no children. Break forth and cry out, you of no labour pains, because more are the children of the desolate woman than of her who has a husband. Now you, brothers like Isaac, are children of promise. At that time the son born in an ordinary way persecuted the son born by the power of the Spirit. It is the same now. And what does the scripture say? Get rid of the slave woman and her son. For the slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with the free woman's son. Therefore, brothers, we are not children of the slave woman, but of the free woman. First, this shows us that just because you're a child of Abraham does not mean that you're a part of God's promised people. Do you remember what John the Baptist said to the Pharisees in Matthew 3? That don't take pride in being a son of Abraham. God can raise sons from these stones. Abraham had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac, that only one was from what represented the promise. But this is also an example of what happens when God makes a promise and we try to do it our way. The hardship and suffering came through Abraham trying to produce a son through his own means, through his slave. And that brought hardship and suffering down the line. Abraham's actions and its consequences correspond with what religion is, really. The consequences of religion. Because religion is about what we can do ourselves, not what God has done for us. Religion talks about keeping special days, having rules, the practices. It's about making sure that we comply with a certain standard. Religion and law is about what we can do. Grace is all about what God is going to do for us, but religion means what we are going to do for God. We focused on religion, but on a relationship with God here in this church, don't we? We focus on a relationship with God. And that's hard for people to understand the difference, but there is a very clear difference. God is bringing about his purposes, his promises, and if we try to do it our way, no matter what reason, we make a mess of it. A person comes to faith, they should not be forced to dress like us, act or speak or live or pray or read or sleep or eat or drink or work or bank or spend, say, think like us. They're not required to be exact image of who I am or who you are. Legalism comes from the thought that, well, if we're the people of God, they've got to become more like us, rather than all of us becoming more like Jesus. There are some churches where men must wear ties and suits to the church, and women must wear dresses down, you know, with to cover all their arms. Because I'll say that it's to respect God. So if you're not wearing that, you're not respecting God. And if you're not respecting God, how can you truly be a believer? Or there are churches that teach things like you can't drink alcohol or eat certain food. The Bible certainly says you can't get drunk, and the safest way to prevent getting drunk is not drink alcohol. So they argue that the person who is serious for God will never drink alcohol. Years ago, I knew a guy who was married, who was grown up, mature. His mother would criticise him for hanging the clothes on the line incorrectly. See, she thought that they should be put inside out, and that halfway, when they're half dry, he should go and take them out and turn them upside down. Her reasoning was they would prolong the life of the clothes, and that if you want to be faithful to God, if you want to be a good steward of God, if you want to be a good Christian, That's what you should do. What a burden. What a terrible burden it was for him. It really was. Rules believers place upon others always take us back to slavery. I don't believe, it's hard for me to say I've never been a slave in that sense, but I don't believe there is any joy in slavery. Yet, that is where this type of living takes us. We are not to return to slavery. We are meant for freedom. Does that mean that we're actually free to do anything we desire? Yes. We can do anything we desire. You have the freedom. You can do whatever you want. The whole world has the freedom to pursue their greatest desires. But the big difference between the believer and the non-believer is that for the believer, their heart's desire is to please God. Because he's already saved us and made us his child. For the believer, they can never have the desire, that desire until they come to faith in Jesus. Because until then, they cannot be a child of God. Most of us have seen the movie Finding Nemo. Remember Finding Nemo? Do you remember Bruce? The shark who used to go to AA meetings because he wanted to stop eating fish. Okay? He didn't want to eat fish anymore. Fish are our friends, they said. That was the motto of this little group, three or four sharks. And they struggled so hard. They struggled so hard because they didn't want to eat fish. And Dory came along and she said, well, I've never eaten fish. And they were amazed. They thought she was just remarkable. She's never eaten fish. And the difference is the nature, isn't it? Sharks, by very nature, eat fish. Some of the little fish don't eat fish. And it's a bit like that for believers and non-believers. For a believer, you can pursue your heart's desire because you're a child of God. And because you're a child of God, your heart's desire is God. But for a non-believer to do that, it's like Bruce trying to give up what is naturally his. So for a believer, there can never be satisfied. For us believers, we can never be satisfied with adultery, pride, arrogance, greed, stealing, immoral sexual behaviour, because that is nothing that will please our Father in heaven. If that's your greatest desire, then I strongly suggest that you're probably not a follower of Jesus. As Jesus' disciples, as people who follow Jesus, we have the greatest freedom ever. We have the freedom to please God, our Father in heaven. Let me just pray.